Devlin Bishop here with you, and welcome to Devlin's Mondo Nostalgia Radio Show. We hope you're having yourself a great week, and thank you for taking the time to press play. I hope you enjoy what I have to say this week, and I'm going to kick things off by wishing everybody a happy Pride Month. Yes, it is June, and that means the rainbow flags are waving, and that's a good thing. And I used to only celebrate the week that used to be around Hamilton Pride, but hey, it deserves to be celebrated. Well, for me, it's celebrated every day of my life. Being a gay male, I can't help it. It's just part of who I am. But the rest of the world celebrates it all through June, so I'm going to say happy Gay Pride Month. And I've always been a believer. Anybody who's been a regular listener knows that Pride, for me, isn't just about being gay or lesbian or trans or bisexual or pansexual or anything. For me, being proud is to be proud of everything. So I include, you know, heterosexuals in there. I just think we should just make it be proud of who you are and be accepting of everybody else. And yes, we can focus on the LGBT community, but I like to welcome everybody in because I have a lot of friends that are straight and are supporters of mine and people in the gay community, and that really just is awesome. And it's nice to see how more open it's become and stuff like that. Now, I have talked of Pride stuff in lots of my podcasts, and you can certainly go back and find some. Please go back through the vaults. I have like 140 shows, so check them out and find where I talk about Pride. And so this year I wasn't even sure if I was going to talk about Pride because it's like, what have I talked about already? But I felt it was important, so I always try to find angles to it. So I decided, I think in the past I've talked about my experiences with Pride, you know, maybe my coming out story I think I've shared. And I know I've talked about some of my favorite gay-related movies, but I decided I'm going to take that a step further tonight. And for the first half of the show, I'm actually going to take a look at my favorite gay-inspired movies. And I recently, in a project, decided to go through and do a look at roughly my 250 favorite movies of all time. Now, I know that's a lot. But then I thought, you know, I wonder if I go through there, if I can find 10 that I think are, you know, gay-themed. And it's funny because I have a different term of what gay-themed movies are. So a couple movies didn't make the list, but are definitely worth checking out for the gay community. And, you know, I'll give a little shout-out to them. Just a couple that didn't make my top 10 of my personal favorite. And this is, you know, you can never do proper top 10s because you change all the time. 6 months from now, I might put one a little higher or one a little less or add a new one or one I've forgotten that I saw that I put in there. But I think right now where I stand, this is my top 10. But again, before we get started talking about the top 10, here's some honorable mentions that some people might not even consider a gay movies or not, but I do. And we'll start with Some Like It Hot. This is, of course, the classic Billy Wilder film with Marilyn Monroe and Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. Now, there's really nothing gay themed in this except that there's drag in it. But in some ways, I still consider this kind of a gay-friendly movie because I thought it was pretty daring. And even though they don't really even bring up, you know, the gayness and stuff, except like at the very end, one of the greatest finales of any movie. And, but you know what? I still consider this a gay-friendly movie because they do play up the whole, you know, men dressing up as women, but I still think it's a movie that should be considered. But I obviously didn't consider it enough to make it because it is in my top 50 movies of all time, but I decided, yeah, I'm going to put it as an honorable mention because it really isn't a gay-themed movie. I just think it should be. Also, I have in there Rebel Without a Cause. James Dean, Sal Mineo, Natalie Wood. This is a famous movie. It's never brought up in the movie. And, you know, I'm not going into James Dean, who was considered to be bisexual. But There is a subtext in this story that the friendship between James Dean's character and Salminio, that Salminio is totally in love with him. And it's never said or spoken, but you can feel it. And it's almost a mutual love, even though the James Dean character is obviously with the Natalie Wood character. And I always consider this kind of a hidden gay-themed movie, but back in the day they couldn't really talk about it. So I'm going to give that a heads up that I do think it does have some things. Talented Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon, Jude Law, Gwyneth Paltrow. Again, this movie doesn't really go into gay themes too much, but a little bit. Matt Damon's character becomes so obsessed with Jude Law that there is definitely some not only emotional but physical attraction there. And when he tries to like just take over his life, it's because he's so much in love with him. Fairly recent movie, Love, Simon. I love this movie a lot. I did have little problems with it here and there being too Hollywood, but I love that Hollywood kind of made a mainstream movie, and I don't think as many people saw it as should, but I'm hoping this is one of those ones that when it hits DVD and stuff that people will catch it. And I'm also going to give a shout out to Cruising. It's not the greatest film, but I always thought that this was a groundbreaking film. Now, it was controversial when it came out because this was literally the first major motion picture that was going to be released about homosexuality. But when it got closer to its release and they found out that it was about a guy who's going around killing gay people, the gay community wanted nothing of it and had people, boycott this movie. Whatever you do, boycott this movie. And they did. It wasn't a very big hit. But what I love about this movie is that the director was William Friedkin, who, directed some wonderful films like The Exorcist, and I believe he also did the, oh, it's slipping my mind. The French Connection, I believe he did the first one. And I think Al Pacino was the star of this movie, and I think it was so brave of Al Pacino to play a cop who goes undercover as a homosexual to go to leather bars in order to find this serial killer. And he basically lives this life, and it starts affecting him. And it's a really controversial movie, and so it's not in my top 10, but so that's an honorable mention. The final honorable mention I have, can't even talk tonight, is The Celluloid Closet. And I didn't put this in my top 10. It's a wonderful film. It's a documentary. And what I love about it is it mixes, being gay and movies, because this tells you the history of how Hollywood has dealt with it. And it takes you right up to about the 70s, I believe. And it might even go further than that, I'm not sure. But it's a wonderful thing. It was based on a book. And this basically chronicles the history of how Hollywood has dealt with homosexuality, where it was almost played as a joke at the beginning, or it was very subtle, like in movies like Spartacus and stuff. And it's a great film, documentary, if you get a chance to see it. So definitely do. But now, drum roll, please. Here's my top 10 favorite gay-inspired movies. And yeah, if you want to see, a lot of these are very entertaining, and you do not have to be gay to enjoy them. And yeah, of course, there's lots that are kind of gay in this movie, and not a lot of, like, maybe lesbian-inspired films, I thought about throwing Showgirls in there, but they don't really deal with that at all. And there aren't. And I have seen some wonderful lesbian movies, but these are movies that appeal to me. And as a young gay male coming out, these are movies I kind of went to. So, they might not represent trans or lesbians, but you guys have your podcast and you can talk about those. I have definitely seen some wonderful movies, and hopefully I'll talk about them in future podcasts. So let's go. This is it. We're talking about gay pride and we're talking about movies. Coming in at number 10 is a wonderful film called Boys in the Band. And guess what? William Friedkin is back. And William Friedkin directed this in 1970. It was based on a play. It's basically one night of a group of friends who get together to celebrate a friend's birthday. And the play was really successful, and they turned this into a motion picture. Now, this was kind of the one of the first really big movies that came out, but because it played up so flamboyantly gay, it really kind of got sidetracked to become a cult classic. I recently showed this to friends, and they actually find it to be a very entertaining movie, but some people don't like it because of the stereotypes in this. But when it comes to stereotypes, I have to admit that some of the stereotypes in the gay community are real. And I think the characters in this are real, although they are very flamboyant, and now that we're in a society that's more, trying to be more gender fluid, we don't kind of look at these representations as much. But this is still a great film. It's a great tension-filled, weird film about almost a bunch of gay men who don't really like being gay men. But, I didn't grow up. Like, I grew up in the 70s, but as a little kid, I just was starting to come to terms with what I am, but I still wasn't dealing it at the age of 7 or 8. It was like, I think I like men, but I didn't even know what that was. But this is a great representation of a movie that came out at a time when people still weren't safe to come out, and they deal with a lot of that in the movie. It's really great, and it's my number 10 film on my gay pride list, Boys in the Band. And recently I just found out that they actually brought it back to Broadway, and it's been cast with really out gay celebrities, and that just makes me happy. Zachary Quinto and Tuck Watkins and Charlie Carver, and I know there's another big one I'm missing, Matt Bomer, that's who I'm missing, and several others that are, and I think it's wonderful that they're doing this and it's back on Broadway. I hope it's a major success. Coming in at number 9 is a new film, Call Me by Your Name. This stars Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet. This movie was up for Best Picture last year, and Timothée Chalamet, who's very young, I think he's only about 20. 21 or something like that, actually got a Best Actor nod, and his name was with some really big people. He didn't win it, but I am glad that I believe the screenplay won the award for Best Original Screenplay or adapted from a book. I can't remember. I think it won one of those, and deservedly so. This is a really great movie. I liked it. It takes place in the 80s, and it's a coming of age film, and I always get this name wrong. I reviewed this film on an earlier podcast, but I really like this film. It was directed by a man named Luca Guadagnino. And it's a great little movie, and it's timeless in a way because it takes place, really well-to-do people. But what I love about this is I've seen movies of, in fact, we got one coming up later in here. That basically is about, underprivileged people. So it's nice to see that this is a coming age story, and this kid is privileged out the wazoo. And one day his father brings in an apprentice for the summer to help him out with some antiques and searching for relics and stuff like that. And they actually get this friendship, this 30-year-old man and this 17-year-old boy. And this is a wonderful film in so many ways. Timothée Chalamet deserved the Oscar nomination. He captures that whole thing. And what I love about this movie, he captures that whole feeling of what it's like to know that you have feelings for the same sex. But it's never really 100% implied if he is just gay or if he's bisexual. Like he's seen with a girl in this as well. And I love how they play it that he's just kind of experimenting, but he's just enjoying life. And it's really great. I've seen Armie Hammer in a lot of things, but this is one of his best performances. And they deal with it pretty well because this is a topic that could have been taken in a very, kind of like a child molestation thing because he's underage. I know 17 really isn't underage, but legally it is. And maybe not in Europe where this takes place, but it's a really touching film. And there's this lovely speech that his father gives that is just worth the price of admission because the family almost encourages this relationship because they see how intense it is. And the father makes a beautiful speech about how he doesn't realize how lucky he is to have met someone like this. And even if it doesn't last, and I won't say if it does or not, it changes your life. And I really love this movie. It's not for the weak of heart, but if you like love stories or coming of age stories, give it a try. It's a good movie, but you will be shocked a bit. Wasn't sure if I should include this movie, but I love this movie. Number 8 is My Own Private Idaho. It stars River Phoenix and it stars Keanu Reeves. And I believe this is Gus Van Sant. I could very well be wrong on this. I'm going to quickly Google it. I want to say it's the name that's popping into my head. And I remember seeing this in theaters. And I remember River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves were like major heartthrobs. Yes, Gus Van Sant is the director. So a lot of teen girls went to see it to, you know, see these really cute guys. And this is when they were at their most, you know. It still kind of disturbs me to watch River Phoenix movies because he died so young. But this movie is just weird and powerful. But it's only within seconds that you realize that these boys are hustlers. They're street hustlers. They sell their bodies to older men and do what they want. And this movie doesn't spend a lot of time talking about sexuality and stuff, but there is a lot of interplay like that. And some of the characters are, some of the characters aren't. They just, you know, sell their ass. But this is an intense movie. And I remember like some of the teen girls just walking out because of the sex scenes where they're seeing these, you know, guys they have crushes on and they're with these older men and they don't hold back in this script. And I think it's a wonderful movie. And that's why I put it at number 8. Number 7 is Cabaret. This is a play that's always been a success. They kind of bring it back all the time. And it's not a surprise. It's an incredible script. I recently watched a short documentary on why this movie is so incredible. The movie version that, is, of course, stars Liza Minnelli and Michael York. And it is directed by Bob Fosse, the famous choreographer who was on Broadway that did do a couple of movies as well, directing. And Cabaret is a wonderful thing because it's kind of a wartime film that, you know, basically looks at a part of life you don't see movies of anymore. You know, we've seen World War II movies. We've seen movies where they're actually in battle, and we've seen movies back in the home front. But this is, you know, takes place in like Berlin, where you see clubs where they used to mock the Nazis and stuff like that. And basically just kind of puts these shows together. And Liza Minnelli lives this bohemian lifestyle and she has friends that are gay. And again, this doesn't always deal with gayness right away. And I think a lot of my favorite movies aren't just blatantly in your face gay movies. And that's the common thread I've noticed in my choices of my personal top 10 movies. I've seen a lot of just, this is gay, you know, this is, you gotta love being gay and stuff. But I like the subtlety, and Cabaret deals with it head on, but it also is very just subtle in some ways about it. But not just subtle, like the narrator parts are in your face, but the rest of the movie just kind of deals with just living your life. And if you love who you want to love, but of course it takes place in a time where you couldn't do that. You'd wind up in a concentration camp or worse. And it's just a really interesting movie. And it's worthy of being on this list. Number 6 is probably a movie you've never heard of, Beautiful Thing. I absolutely adore this movie. This was the movie that made me realize in some ways that one day I can actually fall in love and live a normal life. And Beautiful Thing is a British film that I got to see in a movie theater. I knew nothing about this. And I was taken by a friend to see it, and I just fell in love with this movie. And this movie has changed my life in so many ways. I won't go too much into it just because I have other movies still to talk about. But it was, again, based on a play. It's a 1996 British film directed by Hedy MacDonald. And it's just a love story. It's a coming-of-age love story, and it's got a wonderful soundtrack that features a lot of music from Mama Cass Elliott and the Mamas and the Papas. It stars Linda Henry, Glenn Berry, Scott Neal, and it's basically about two boys growing up in the povertish kind of welfare-y type land in Britain, and one realizes immediately he's gay, and then there's this jock type guy who loves girls, but when they're forced to become friends, they start having feelings for one another, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful movie, and it has no agenda. This is probably the closest movie that actually deals with it head on in some ways. This was another one too, I think. But this one is just a feel-good movie. If you can get your hand on this movie, this is a romance movie. And it's not just about falling in love with somebody else. This is falling in love with who you are and coming to terms with it. It's not heavy-handed in any way. It just plays out like a friendship that is having angles that you didn't expect. And it's just a nice, nice movie. And I'm tearing up just talking about it. Number five is The Adventures of Priscilla, the Queen of the Desert, an Australian film that starred Hugo Weaving and Guy Pearce and Terrence Stamp. I had to think about it. Terrence Stamp, because I almost said another actor, Terrence Knox, but no, not at all. Adventures of Priscilla came out in the 90s, I believe. I'm looking it up right now. And it was a really big hit. It actually became a small, it became a hit. Like, it was a small independent Australian film, and it became a huge hit. It was directed and written by Stephen Elliott. And it's a comedy drama that has a lot of music. It's basically about three drag queens who decide they have a chance to do a gig at this resort, but they decide that it would be fun to buy a bus and just travel to get there with all these wonderful adventures and misadventures. Now, it's fun because it's played up over the top, but what I love about this movie is they bring up several very serious issues that gay people have to deal with. And I don't care if you're gay, lesbian, trans, I don't care if you're straight, any of the things they bring up here, everything from having to deal with, you know, well, I won't tell you because they don't deal with it much. And they never offer a solution in these movies. It's just a fun movie that everybody's having a good time. And then they have this emotional dramatic parts that remind you of, yeah, we have to deal with this too. But they don't try to solve the problems. That's the problem with a lot of these like really heavy-handed gay movies, is that they try desperately to thing. Priscilla doesn't, but it still qualifies because they're gay men. It's just a wonderful film, and it's feel good. And you do not have to be gay to enjoy this movie. The costumes that won an Oscar in it are absolutely phenomenal. And they lip sync to a lot of great songs. There is some ABBA, be warned. But there's a lot of other great songs in this too. So definitely check it out. It is a wonderful film. It did come out in the 90s, 1994. And it's a great one. Following in the same lines, in fact, I've almost got three in a row. Number four is Hedwig and the Angry Inch. I recently rewatched this with a friend, and I love this movie so much. It is so deep. And again, stage play. I'm seeing a theme here. A lot of these movies were based on stage plays. This one was actually pretty daring in my eyes, because it was actually the guy who wrote the play actually went on to direct the film. And I don't think he had any kind of experience doing it, but he did it well. Came out in 2001. It's John Cameron Mitchell, and he stars in the movie as Hedwig, and he also wrote and directed this film. That, as I said, was a stage thing that became a movie, and I think it actually, I'd want to see the stage play, because I don't know how they do it, but the actual movie itself is just so well written, I can't. And anyhow, it's a fictional rock band fronted by an East German transgender, and basically a romance builds with a young man named Tommy that as Hedwig is getting older, is basically trying to not only fall in love with the boy, but teach him, how to be a man. And the love grows sour, and it becomes a real interesting relationship. I can't go too deep in it because there is a big plot twist in it. In fact, I think the plot twist sometimes turns some people off. It's definitely a plot twist that you have to rewatch a couple of times before you either decide if you love it or hate it. I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite films. This is a cult classic, but I don't even know if you can call it a cult classic anymore because this came back to Broadway after the movie was a success, and I think it's run on Broadway for a long time with a lot of actors playing in it. But certainly do the movie a turn if you get a chance, because this is a wonderful film, and the soundtrack is incredible. The songs written for this movie and this rock band are absolutely wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Origin of Love is one of the standouts, and there's a lot of good standout songs in this. Coming in at number three is a movie that I don't think people even consider to be a gay movie, but I do. It's Victor Victoria, directed by Blake Edwards, the man who gave us movies like The Pink Panther and stuff like that, a really big filmmaker. He made Victor Victoria, and this is the story of Julie Andrews, and it also stars James Garner and, oh my God, I gotta remember his name. I love the man. He's my favorite part of the movie, and I can't think of his name. Robert Preston, there you go. And this is a movie about, it takes place in the Depression. And it is a movie about a woman who is trying to make ends meet, and she wants to do just, she's ready to do just about anything to make money. And she's a wonderful singer, but nobody will hire her because she has no credentials. And back then, because times were so tight, they needed to fill bars and hotels that were having singers with people who were thing. So her gay friend, and that's not the only gay part. He's got a subtitle, but his character of Toddy is just so magical in this. But he comes up with this crazy idea to dress Julie Andrews as a man, and then the man is going to be a famous drag female impersonator. So the reason he's going to be so great at being a female personality because he's actually a female, but he wants to fool the rich people and the socialites that he's actually a guy. And it's a wonderfully wicked turn, but what makes it worse is an American gangster comes to town and he totally falls for her and doesn't necessarily believe that he could have feelings for this person because he's a very straight male. And when he sees Victoria for the first time, he's in love. And then when he finds out it's a female impersonator, he kind of gets ribbed by his closest friends because it's like, oh, you were turned on by a man. But James Garner is like, no, I think this is a woman because I'm not attracted to a man. Some people probably don't think of this as a gay-friendly movie. I actually do because it actually celebrates gayness, but as the story comes through, absolutely 100% celebrates gayness. Getting closer to the top, number two is Brokeback Mountain. And I actually thought this was going to be number one, but I did give the heads up to another movie that doesn't really deal too much with gayness, but the whole movie is. But we'll get to talking about that one in a minute. Brokeback Mountain is one of the greatest love movies I've ever seen. And when people tell me, oh, I like movies like, Titanic or The Notebook and, I love them too. Well, I don't like love Titanic. I love The Notebook. I mildly like Titanic, but not for the love story. Brokeback Mountain is a beautiful love story about two straight men who are basically stuck together for the whole summer and decide to share a romance. And to me, this movie is just phenomenal because it breaks ground in ways to show a relationship that is just so powerful. And how friendship can suddenly turn into love and it breaks borders that, you know, I'm a straight male, but I'm attracted to you. And I think that's the importantness of this. And it shows, you know, the sadness when they're apart and the love when they're together. And it takes place in the 60s and 70s. So, and I think right up to the 80s. And it just shows, like, the having to deal with not really being out, but realizing you're in love with somebody that your society tells us you're not. So this big movie definitely should get a shout out. It's Ang Lee won a Oscar for this movie, and rightfully so, because it's just a wonderful movie. And quite frankly, I think you should check it out. Of course, the leads are Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, who both were nominated for Oscars for this movie. Neither of them won, but I think they should have, because it's such a powerful movie. And it didn't win Best Picture. It was beat out by Crash. And a lot of older Hollywood said that they wouldn't vote for it or even see it. And it's sad, because it is such a wonderful movie. In hindsight, a lot of people say it's one of the big missteps in the Academy Awards thing that Crash won over Brokeback Mountain. Because even to this day, Brokeback Mountain is considered to be one of the better movies. And it's considered one of the biggest upsets in Academy Award history. And I stopped watching the Academy Awards after that, because Brokeback Mountain had won like 4 awards and then it didn't win Best Picture, and I just decided to walk away from that popularity contest. Finally, my number one movie is Rocky Horror Picture Show. Shouldn't come as a big surprise. Again, Broadway, off-Broadway musical that was turned into a musical and then made into a movie. Wonderful movie. This movie doesn't throw gay in your face, but it does throw cross-dressing and, you know, basically just doing it if it feels good, you know. Don't dream it, be it. I love it. It's one of the greatest sayings ever. Don't dream it, be it. And I think this movie is number one on my list because of the fact that it plays to so many people. Lesbians love this movie, you know, bisexual people, trans, pan, gay people, straight people love this movie. This movie is about just doing what feels good. It's played up as like an old tribute to B films, but, you know, none of the B movies ever dealt with sexuality in this way. And like Tim Curry's portrayal of, you know, I'll just screw whatever I want, is so powerful. It's like the power of ego. It's one of the greatest roles ever. I think Tim Curry was really, it's sad he was denied a best Oscar for this, an acting Oscar, because I think his portrayal is so beautifully subtle. It's so rich and full. And I think this movie is a proud gay movie because of the fact that it doesn't throw it in your face, but, you know, it talks about taking chances, and if it feels good, you know, go for it. And, you know, you can tell Brad and Janet's lives are altered after their experiences here. And I'm not talking about when you get into the sequel, Shock Treatment. I'm talking about just at the end, you can tell they got a lot to think about when they go home. So I think this is a worthy movie to be my number one of my gay pride top 10 movies. Of course, there's lots of other great films, you know, The Birdcage, and I can't even think of so many. Midnight Cowboy has some references in it. You know, Two Girls in Love is a wonderful movie, Bound. I can't think of them all, but lots of great stuff there. I suggest that if you're looking to celebrate pride and you're not one to go out to the bars or go out to the parades, what you should do is go online and Google, you know, gay, lesbian, trans, pan, whatever films, and see what they have out there and give them a shot, because there's a lot out there. I'm sure the streaming sites, Netflix, have some. If they don't, they should. They should have Extra on June. And there you go. That's my top 10 thing. As I said, they might fluctuate in the future or stuff, but these are 10 films that I think you definitely should put on your must-see list. And if you are a young person who's just coming out, this is mandatory viewing for you guys. Because I think these are movies that you're going to learn a little bit about yourself in it, even if you don't even relate to the characters. I just think you will. Anyhow, going to take a short break, and then I will be back with the second half of Devlin's Mondo Nostalgia radio show.
Yum, yum. It's a meal in itself. Our all-meat super dog. Enjoy one now.
This is a dill pickle, a mighty pretty pickle, especially when he joins you at the show. We have lots of pretty pickles waiting for you at the refreshment center. They're plump, tender, mouth-watering. Wouldn't one taste good right now?
Welcome back. Thank you for joining me again. We're here with you and Devlin's... Sorry, got a little bit of a bubble in my throat. Devlin's Mondo Nostalgia radio show. And this is the second half. Bear with me while I try to clear my throat here. I usually have a glass of water with me, but apparently I was doing other things during the intermission and did not get a beverage to clear my throat. But I think I got it clear right now. And I'm back to talk about a couple more things. I didn't know when to talk about this, but I think I'd do it now just so we don't end the episode on a, you know, a down note. And not that this is a story. Well, it is a little bit down because I'm going to talk about something that's happened recently in the world that's kind of affected me. And I'm going to take it a little bit further than that. But it's kind of a sad time to be a Star Wars fan. A couple of episodes ago, I gushed about the new Solo movie and how much I liked it. Well, you probably all know now it's being considered to be almost like a box office bomb. It probably will make its money back, but because it's nowhere near the money that, you know, Rogue One or The Force Awakens or The Last Jedi made, a lot of people are going to look at this as a bad thing. And I'm not going to try to analyze why it's not doing well. You could, you know, blame anything from there's a little bit of a Star Wars boycott. After Last Jedi, it kind of really became a very divisive movie that kind of torn the fandom in two. And, you know, even though people didn't like the prequels, I've never seen anything like this where some people absolutely adored The Last Jedi and some people said that's enough. And you know what? This is the way to protest a movie. You know, if you don't like something, you just stop going to it, you know, and then that'll, because, you know, you can say art or whatever, but the bottom line is that movie companies want to make money. And so if you're really unhappy with a direction something's going, the fact that you keep throwing the money, they're going to just keep making the same stuff. So yes, technically the boycott has been, really tough. For Solo, because, you know, you heard my review. I absolutely adored the film. And I'm actually surprised to hear how many people not boycott it, because to be honest with you, I get that. And I kind of glad they did. I just wish it didn't have to happen to a really good movie like Solo. But I'm actually surprised to hear some of the diehard fans who have gone seeing it saying that they didn't like it. They thought it was okay and just a fluffy popcorn movie. But I honestly think it's the closest to the original trilogy that we've had. It's fun. It's entertaining. There's some really heartfelt moments in it. And I don't think most Disney movies have, Disney Star Wars movies have come close to that. I love The Force Awakens, but even they handled it a little heavy-handed. And although I wasn't the biggest fan of Rogue One and The Last Jedi, I actually thought Solo came close to catching the essence of it in so many ways. And it saddens me to see so many people that didn't like it. And but then there was news that came out this week that really saddened me. As I said, a lot of fans really didn't like Last Jedi. One of the many reasons were it was the character of Rose Tico. Now, I have nothing against the Rose Tico character, but I didn't like what they did for her character in the story. I've spoke about it, so I'm not going to go into detail. But I didn't like how they portrayed it. But in no way does I think it affects the actress Kelly Marie Tran. But the sad part is apparently since The Last Jedi's come out and has, you know, a lot of fans angry, the actress Kelly Marie Tran recently actually got rid of her Instagram and her social media because of the amount of hate she was getting. And she couldn't take it anymore and decided to close it down. And this really saddens me. Because as a Star Wars fan, even something like the prequels, where a lot of people didn't like them, it was never as divisive as it is since The Last Jedi came out. And no person, I don't care who you are, should be felt that, saying all this horrible stuff. Because Kelly Marie Tran, she had an opportunity to be in a Star Wars movie, and think of the amount of people who would just love to be in a Star Wars film. And Rian Johnson believed in her, and she followed her script. It's not like she wrote this story. So I don't know why people are putting the hate on her, because she is just doing what she's told. I don't even think you should go after Rian Johnson. I hated The Last Jedi, but he made his decisions. Lots of people did like it. So I think it's ridiculous to just go after them. I also have to say that, I've been reading a lot of articles about the dark side of Star Wars fandom and stuff like that, and that it's horrible that this woman had to give up her social media because she was being harassed. And I totally agree with all of that. But this isn't the first time this has happened. Jake Lloyd, who played Anakin Skywalker in the first part one, Phantom Menace, played the young Darth Vader, or future Darth Vader. And that kid apparently was traumatized by a lot of fans throughout the years, which led him to a lot of drug problems and a lot of not getting roles. And, his life was practically destroyed because of it. So the fact that the media is making so much hype, like, boy, we've seen Star Wars fans are strong, but this is the first time they've been blatantly going after one person, and that is not true. Jake Lloyd's life may have been so much better if people actually like realized, he was just doing his job. What made this worse was that they were attacking a kid, and that is horrible because, this kid was just coming out. He was in a couple movies, Jingle All the Way, Phantom Menace, and then like people just lambasted him for being, horrible in the movie, And again, it was, Lucas that, had the scripts made and was the one who directed that performance. But the fact that either of these actors were harassed is horrible. And it kind of makes me saddened to be a Star Wars fan. But I'm also saddened not only because of the fact that it seems to be becoming vicious. That doesn't surprise me because it's everywhere. I'm a DC movie fan. I stand by the DC movies. I consider Batman versus Superman one of the best superhero movies ever. I don't even understand in a lot of ways, why people don't like that movie and don't see it the way I do. But I just live with it. But I've seen so much hate towards the DCU. And that's kind of where I started seeing a lot of hatred. And, social media has so many wonderful things to offer, but this latest thing is just not part of it. Absolutely not. And it's really too bad because of the fact that, nobody should feel like this in any way. And, so when I see all this, but my problem with it is that, I like that they're taking chances with Star Wars and stuff like that, but at the same time, I feel like maybe I'm getting to that age where I just know what I like, and I think I am open to new things because I'm kind of getting fatigue for the blockbuster movies. That's why, last year and the year before, I've been actually trying to hunt out smaller films because that's where you see the real difference in art and stuff like that in movies. But when I hear, like I thought Rogue One was okay. I didn't think it was a masterpiece by any means. And Last Jedi totally, I'm not going to be the, oh my God, it ruined my childhood, because it never will, because the original three movies are superior to me, and I remember all the times. Even when I rewatched Star Wars recently for the Damien and Devlin review, check that out, by the way, on YouTube, shameless plug. I had that feeling of being in the theater and as a kid again, which is the same feeling I had when I watched Solo. And I've seen it twice in theaters, and I hope to get out to see it a third time. sometime soon. But anyhow, I just I hate the fact that I'm seeing so many people telling me that, Rogue One and Last Jedi are like the future of Star Wars. Because Star Wars is something that's been in my life since I was 9 years old when I first saw the first installment. I bought the toys, I slept on the bed sheets, I still buy the toys. I just recently bought pop vinyl figures of young Solo and young Chewbacca. And I constantly, Star Wars is such a place in my life. I think I was joked that if you go into every room in my thing, except maybe the bathroom and the spare room, I think you'll see Star Wars in almost every room in my house. But anyhow, I don't know, when a movie like Solo comes out, and I'm not even talking about the fact that it wasn't a financial success, I want to talk about the fact that so many Star Wars fans are saying how awful it is, or it's just a horrible popcorn movie, like just it's just fluff and shouldn't be taken seriously. When I think Solo was miles ahead of Last Jedi and Rogue One. So I'm almost thinking that after number nine, and I'm really not looking forward to number nine because I have a feeling that J.J. Abrams is just going to come in and have to retcon everything that Rian Johnson did. And I honestly don't want to see that. As much as I don't like Last Jedi, I hope they just at least deal with what has happened. But I get the feeling J.J. Abrams might come in and just kind of wipe it away and say, okay, no, this didn't happen or this didn't happen. Don't worry, I won't give any spoilers. And honestly, thing, but if I like movies like Solo, but I don't like these movies that are, supposedly like groundbreaking, like Rogue One and Last Jedi, I don't know if I'm on board with the future of Star Wars because, I'll continue to see them and I'll enjoy the ones that I enjoy. I'm gonna preach Solo's praises as long as possible and it's always good for a good discussion when somebody tells me it was just okay. I ate popcorn to it, and I'd be like, are you kidding me? Look at what the things that it did to enhance the original movies. And I don't know. As a Star Wars fan, I'm almost at the point, like maybe I'm going to watch number nine, and I have no interest in the Rian Johnson movie. I'll be okay with the Boba Fett and, Obi-Wan movies only because of the fact that, there's a good chance they might be where we continue the stories of Han Solo, because right now it doesn't look like we're going to get a sequel to Solo. But because Alden Ehrenreich is signed to the universe, he could certainly show up in the Boba Fett movies. And there's plot twists that are in Solo that could definitely wind up in the Kenobi movies. So, yeah, I'm thinking, it's been a good run. I'm not going to give up totally. And probably when I see my first trailer of the J.J. Abrams, I'm going to be like, whoa, that was great. But right now, I would be okay if I had to walk away from Star Wars, which I never thought I'd hear myself say that. But there'll always be a side of me that'll want to check it out. But maybe I won't go to the theaters or anything. Because if people tell me Solo is just average, I'm missing something. Because I thought Solo was an amazing film. It's still in theaters. I hope you give it a chance. That's the problem I find now is that too many people go on Rotten Tomatoes or they re watch all these reviews on YouTube. And hey, I'm a movie reviewer. I get it. But most people will still go to the theater to make their own judgment. In fact, I promote that. When Damien and I review a film, even if it's an older film, we say, you watch it. You tell us what you think because this is just our opinion. We're not telling you. But I think so many people are almost like, lambs following a leader, and they just like, oh, well, Rotten Tomatoes only gave it a 57%, so we're not going to go waste our time. We'll just, download it and stream it on, Netflix when it comes on there. And I think it's too bad because I think, places like in Europe and stuff, I think they still go and check it out for themselves. That's why a lot of movies that don't do well here do well in Europe because they're like, I want to judge for myself. And I think people should. But right now, it's kind of sad for me saying that Star Wars is maybe something I might become a passing fancy for me. But I will give Nine a chance, and I just hope they don't retcon all the stuff that Rian Johnson thought was groundbreaking in the original. All right, I'm done talking Star Wars. Anyhow, I want to talk about something I did the other day that I really loved, and I felt like talking about it. I've talked about dancing in the past and how much I love it, and how I didn't dance for a good part of my early part of life. And then when I finally found dancing, I couldn't give it up, and I dance any chance I get. And one thing I haven't done, now I'm going to admit something that I don't think I've ever talked about here, but me and my friends actually have video dance parties in me and Mike's apartment. And we did this a couple of years ago on New Year's Eve, and there was only a handful of us, and we just did it. You know, I have the Roku, and we put on some videos, and we just danced. And since then, they've built. We don't have a lot of people, but we have a loyal group that come in and just dance how they want to and feel good. And we have food, and we have lights going and everything, and we have a great mix of music. And it's been wonderful. Even people I know that, you know, dance in clubs say they love it because they get just to do their own thing and stuff. But recently I went to a friend, a wonderful friend, Tina Taylor, has just released her first book of poetry. And yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about that, but I'm very proud of her. And I don't know, I should actually ask her onto the show. I don't know if we've had too many poets on the show. I've had some lyricists and some musicians that write music. And but yeah, we'll talk about that. But I'm so proud of her. But she had like a release party for her book, and she had it at Club 54 in Burlington, which at one time was just a comedy club, I believe, but now it's kind of does comedy here and there, and they do a lot of like dancing. So I decided to go. I don't know Tina very well, but in the last couple of months I've known her a little bit. And so I decided, let's go. You know, I want to support her. You know, I'm very proud of her. It was a brave poetry book. And yeah. And so I went to the Club 54. I didn't know what to expect. I was with my friend Gary Reed, and I had a really good night, but it was very surreal because I hadn't been in a nightclub probably for over close to maybe 10 years, I would say. And I think the last time I went, no, actually, I did go a couple of years ago when I was up for the Hamilton Arts Award. I went and they had a night at a club, and I only stayed a little bit because I didn't really enjoy the music, and I danced a little bit, but it wasn't very good. And it kind of just weaned me away from nightclubs. But before that, I think me and my friend Alexandra went to dance at a gay club here called the Embassy, which is sadly no longer. And we had a great time shaking her ass. The music still at that point was getting to a point where it's like I knew a few songs, or they'd play weird versions of other songs. And sometimes I like a nice remix. Other times it's like, oh, this kills the song so much. But honestly, when I'm dancing, it don't matter. They could play, you know, a pot with, you know, some like wooden spoons on it, and I'd be dancing. But anyway, so it was neat going to a nightclub. So they did the comedy, and I won't even talk about the comedy because it was such a short part of the night, and that's a whole review of itself. So I will talk about that later. And then I after that they literally, you know, had one comic, and then the host came back out and said, well, there's your evening. And then they just got rid of the chairs, we all moved to couches, and then they just, you know, pumped in this, you know, that kind of music, and suddenly it was a dance club. And we decided to stick around because food was still coming. Now, it doesn't matter, as I said, I didn't love the music. I liked every once in a while there was a song I loved and I had to dance to, but I really realized that my days of as I said, there was a time when I didn't dance. I used to worry about people looking at me, and anybody who knows me dancing knows that now I will just dance. I don't care who's looking. I like put my arms up over my head. I do weird moves that I might have seen in a music video or a musical. And I just feel it, and I just have fun with it. So we had a couple people that I didn't know going up to dance, and I was like, oh, I really want to dance, but I don't like to be that lone guy dancing by himself, especially in a nightclub. You know, here I don't care, in my own apartment I can do that. But anyhow, they were eating, and the music was coming on, and there was a song I really liked. I believe it was a Rihanna song, you know, We Found Love in a something place. I can't remember it. We found love in a hopeless case. It could be hopeless, something like that. Anyhow, it was a great song. It was pounding, and I could see I was on the couch and I'm moving, and I'm like, yeah, I can't just sit in the sidelines anymore. I can't believe there was a time that I couldn't dance. So anyhow, my friend Gary was with me, and he said, "You look like you want to get up and dance." And I go, "Yeah, I do, but you know, I'm waiting for some of the women I knew to go up and dance, but it looked like they weren't really going to do it." And Gary said, "Well, you know, after I finish my chicken wings, we'll go up and dance." And I loved that this was a real straight club, like real straight. It was like a meat factory. Like, you know, you could tell the guys and the girls that were looking to, you know, dance, but also looking to get laid. So I loved that Gary was not even hesitant to take me up dancing. And you know, Gary is a very heterosexual male, but he's also what makes him so sexy in so many ways is that he is so in tune with his sexuality that he had no problem going up and dancing with me. So finally, he finished his chicken wings. We went up and danced. And we actually tried, they have these cages at Club 54. And he said, "Let's go up to the cage and dance." And I was like, "Yeah, I've never danced in a cage." And when we went to the door, they actually had a sign that said, "Women only." And I was, Gary could tell he was upset, but he was, I think, more upset because he knew it was something I wanted to do. And it really bothered me that it's 2018 and you can't do that. Gary mentioned there could be something where, you know, maybe girls go up there because they don't want to be grinded on with guys. And I said, that's might be it, but at the same time, I don't think that's a great excuse because I was watching it. Because before I hit up the dance floor, I was watching it, and yeah, there are a lot of sleazy guys that are trying to just kind of suddenly be dancing with you and maybe touching body parts to places you don't want to. But honestly, there were a lot of women doing the same thing to single guys there too, and you know, the single guys, you know, don't mind it as much, but you could tell a couple of times they were a little, you know, distracted by it, or just a little, you know, why is this happening kind of thing. So I think it went both ways. And I think we forget that sometimes. And if we're going to do this, we shouldn't. But anyhow, we decided to hit the dance floor, and they had this big, like, Saturday Night Fever light up dance floor. And Gary and I were like, okay, we're going to make our move to it. But it was very full. And we eventually got up there. Gary and I took the big leap and we started dancing. And you know what? Gary and I were probably, there were older people there, but we were probably up in the older people. Like, he's like in his late 40s, I'm 50. And I was, me and him were up dancing for over an hour, I would say, and it was great. Like, I was sweating, he was sweating, and we were just like, we saw young people that were tired out after a few songs, and we just kept going, and we had such a good time. And I love the feel of the nightclub, but at the same time, I was also like, yeah, I don't know if I could do this all the time. Maybe I'm just spoiled because I program all the music when we do our video dance parties. But you know, I danced to a lot of songs that were pretty generic, and I'm not trying to be an old fuddy-duddy like, oh, music when my time was much better. Because anybody who knows me, I listen to a lot of new stuff as well as old stuff now. It just, a lot of it just felt cold and heartless. And I admit, most of them were remix tracks, so maybe if I heard the original, I'd actually like them. I think I knew a little bit more songs than Gary did, but they did play a 90s set, and we were loving that, you know. Anytime they play One More Time and I'm on the dance floor, that's when I'm almost like in heaven. That would be heaven to me. And being there with somebody I care about so deeply, like Gary, like I love the man so much. You know, he's been on the show many times. You know that. Anyhow, yeah, I had a great time, but after a while, you know, the thumping, you know, the doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot, like the same beat over and over, it was getting a little monotonous, and then we were ready to go anyhow. And I just wanted to talk about the experience because it was like, I enjoyed it. I had a great time, but at the same time, I was like, yeah, I kind of want to be home and listen to, like, you know, maybe dance to some 80s or some 90s, some 50s and 60s. You know, I like a nice variety, and when you're getting just the same Latin beats all the time, and like house, and I wish there was more house. I don't think there was any house. It was more like, more of a throbbing beat than that. But anyhow, I had a great time, and it brought me back to the times that I used to go to the clubs, where I used to absolutely adore just unwinding, or the first couple times where I just finally said, fuck it. I don't care if I look stupid. I would rather look stupid than be the person just sitting there watching everybody having a good time. And now, I have a couple rules when I hit the dance floor. First, I don't make fun of anyone who's on the dance floor. If they're doing a move that's kind of ridiculous or crazy, I don't care. They're up doing it at the thing. And then I actually don't, I feel bad for the people that you can see kind of want to be up there, but because of shyness or their insecurities, they just can't. I almost want to go up to them and take their hand and take them, of course, in a straight bar like that. I would have probably got my face punched in. But I'm just saying that, there are many times, ladies and men are just sitting there, and you can tell they kind of want to be up. You can tell their bodies moving to the music. And I just want to take them and say, you know what? Life's too short. Get up and dance. Even if somebody thinks that you're dancing ridiculous, they're going to forget it in a minute, and they look at them, they're probably dancing more ridiculous than you. But the truth of the matter is you're the one who's heart's pumping and stuff, and it's just a wonderful feeling. And I don't know if I'll be going to nightclubs. That was just a rare case. As much as I hate going to weddings, at least they usually play a variety of music that you can get up and, hey, summer of 69, I can dance to this. So it's my nightclubbing days, I think, are over, but that doesn't say if somebody invited me, hey, you want to go nightclubbing? I might try to talk myself out of it, but if I haven't danced in a while, I probably will say, you know what? Sure, why not? It's a night. And I had a great time, and I thank all my partners, but special Gary, who, was there dancing with me the whole night, in this blatantly straight bar. There was a couple of, lesbian couples. I think there was a couple of gay couples, but you could tell that it was more triggered to it. And anybody that works at Club 54 listening to this, I doubt it, but if it is, it's 2018. Open up those cages to anybody. If you don't want them, they had two sets of cages. Have one for the boys, have one for the girls. If it really is, to give the girls a more quiet place to dance, come on. It's like a meat market. You're up in the cage. I want to dance in a cage, damn it. This is a new dream of my life. I didn't think I had this, but dreams are out there, boys and girls, and I want to dance in a cage. I've danced on risers at gay clubs. I've danced on, well, after last night, I danced on multi-technical dance floors, which I really have to talk to Mike because I think we could have actually built one of those for it. I don't know where the hell we'd keep it when we're not doing the dance party, but we'll look into it. Anyhow, that's my show for tonight. If you listen to this and I got you inspired, either stay home, check out some of those Pride movies I mentioned to you, or go out night clubbing. Whatever the case is, I hope you have a great night. And I will see you here next week on Devlin's Mondo Nostalgia Radio Show. Have a great night. See you next time.